Some guy has to do the dishes and make the bed occasionally. I mean,
John's learning dishes.
Oh, tell it to somebody.
Yeah, he is.
Missy refers to it as a form of behavioral modification. After 32 years of marriage, he says, now you're going to learn.
Yeah, good for her.
Tell it to somebody. Hell.
Do you do that, Ben?
You know? I do bed. Okay. I do, well, bed.
Yeah.
Living in that.
Okay.
If the audience would, pay attention to laughing and jumping around, we will call to order the Wednesday, May 12th edition of the Labor Union Public Safety Sub and continue our public hearing on 5506, the Department of Corrections bill, funding bill. And I think when we adjourned, we were just about ready to start administration, but I don't want to rush you into anything if you have some other closing remarks with regard to yesterday's presentation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we did not have, and you're correct that we were about ready to begin administration. I'm Dave Cook. I'm the director of the Department of Corrections. With me is Bill McKee, advanced budget analyst. Bill's going to start with the numbers on administration. We're going to do that. We want to, if we can, please talk about this records project and about community corrections, which are the two enhancement packages in the DOC budget. Hit both of those in the next several minutes and then move on to institutions.
I'd like to do the overviews for the administration unit and the community corrections grants as well at this time. We have handouts on both of these, and starting with administration, the governor's revised budget for this unit is $36.4 million general fund. That's a 14.3% increase over the legislative approved budget. Other funds of $43.1 million are a 34.2% increase from the legislative. Things we'll talk to you about here are the increasing support for the offender information and sentence computation unit, beginning reengineering the correction information system, the issuance costs for the new certificate for participation that we'll ask you to approve for construction and other purposes, and delays in hiring and reductions in services and supplies. The starting point here was a $31 million general fund and $31.6 million total funds in the alleged adopted budget, 128.11 FTE. The only emergency board issue here was salary adjustment. Current service level, generally the issues you'll see in all of the divisions in the department, position inflationary cost changes, startup for the Women's Prison Intake Center, startup for the Two Rivers Correctional Institution in Umatilla, phase in the new beds at Snake River in Ontario, elimination of one-time costs for bed units that are open in this biennium,
And then some specific things to this program unit, the retirement of some energy loans will be paid off in 97-99, some increased staff in the offender information sentence computation unit that was part of the Women's Prison Intake Center fund, and then some technical adjustments just to adjust expenditure categories with no increase in funding. Several packages here. The first two are packages you'll see in pretty much each of the program units. The Women's Prison Intake Center was delayed until 2001-2003. And this program unit that reduced general fund by $1.5 million, and the women aged 9 positions is 1.47 FTE. Package 95 took some reductions in the startups and operations for the Two Rivers Correctional Institution in Umatilla. Again, you'll see these in most units. We delayed the hiring of all positions by a week, limited PERS for the first 6 months of employment for new hires, and reduced remaining services and supplies by 15%. We'll adjust this slightly in the governor's revised budget. Reduce the general fund by $108,000. Package 141, other funds, it's the cost of issuance for new COPs for construction and facilities projects. That's $5.6 million other funds for the issuance costs. Package 145 is Corrections Information Reengineering. This begins an update of the CIS information system for the department. The project will begin with work on the community corrections modules, which counties are required to use as part of their operations, community corrections, and they'll be providing the $550,000 other funds to begin this part of the project. 146, offender information sentencing computation. Management and the technical assistance for the sentence computation unit. The department is in the process of centralizing this unit and automating its work. The governor's revised budget will delay hiring these positions by an average of 8 months. The package started with $776,000 general fund and 6 positions. The governor's revised budget for administration delays hiring new positions at Two Rivers and in the sentencing computation unit. Delays still in vacancies in the Community Corrections Administration, and eliminates inflation increases and reduces base service and supplies. Revised budget includes funding for the increased term general costs and also captures the rate reduction from the Department of Justice budget that you passed out earlier. And finally, there's a new COP management assessment from the State Treasurer this budget here. There's a technical adjustment to transfer one position to Central Support and Operations for training purposes. And the net effect of this is a reduction of general fund of $671,000, and the governor's recommended elimination of the position and 5.17 FTE. What's missing here is the current budget is the reductions in services and supplies. Any questions on this? Otherwise, I'll go ahead with the Community Corrections Grant, which the department wants to combine these presentations into a...
Mr. Chairman?
Chairman Harris.
Bill... The budget is 32.9% above the 97-99 legislative approved budget. If you look at 95-97 actuals, the 97-99 biennium legislative approved budget is less by about $12 million. And then if you look over on the governor's revised, it increases it back up to almost within $1 million of the actual 95-97. Just trying to gain some information here on how you arrived at 32.9%. Is that the four issues that you have a excerpt here that says increased support for offender information, all these things. What's driving this budget by that greater increase?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, that's part of the issues. There are also current service level issues that are primarily overhead. All the department's overhead is budgeted here. There's an increase in state government service charges. There are position phase-ins that occur in this unit as well. So those are all.
Well, even the current service level is $38 million, and this governor's revised is $43 million.
You will notice that in the total funds, there's a significant increase from both the ledge approved and the current service level in other funds, and that amount is pretty much entirely the issuance cost for new COPs.
Okay, the, I'm just trying to get the percentage of an increase because it talks about the governor's revised budget is 14.3%. Total funds are increased by 32.9%.
Mr. Shanahan, again, the significant difference between the general and the total funds is because of the increase in other funds for the issuance cost for the COP. That's why you're seeing such a difference in the increase in total.
Well, over here on page 2, we have the Corrections Information System Program 154, 550,000 other funds. Are there going to be certificates of participation?
Senator, though, no, Mr. Senator Hannon, those funds will be provided by the counties. The changes to the information system that are going to be made next biennium are intended to support the community corrections part of the information system. So because the counties use it, they're funding these applications.
Does the statute require counties to participate?
It does, Senator. The statute requires the counties to use the corrections information systems to manage offenders, parole probation, and simple
education. In the community corrections?
In community corrections, yes, sir.
Thank you.
If there are no other questions in administration, I'll very quickly do the community corrections grants piece. The governor's revised budget for community corrections grants is $179.1 million general fund. It's all general fund. This is an 8.3% increase from the 97-99 ledge approved budget. The things you'll see here is funding the Center for 1145 population growth projected in the through the April 99 forecast and increased payments to the counties for management of Senate Bill 1145 population. We started with a ledge adopted budget of $165.3 million general fund, no emergency board actions. The current service level issues were just the inflation increase. The increase in the Senate Bill 1145 population through the October 98 forecast as part of current service level. And then caseload increases in parole and post-prison supervision, which is the other part of the community corrections grant. The only policy package you hear is a reduction in the inflation rate to a 2% annual growth, which is the same inflation rate the department has for its services and supplies. That reduced the budget by $1.1 million general fund. The governor's recommended budget asked for $7.7 million general fund in the emergency board to increase funding for management of Senate Bill 1145 offenders and counties. In the revised budget, we're asking you to shift that emergency board appropriation to the department's budget implement a higher payment for Senate Bill 1145. And we are delaying the start of that higher payment until September of 2000 in order to accommodate the increased population in Senate 1145 and April 99 forecast. So the governor's revised budget increases the general fund budget for this unit by 7.7. It's actually, of course, a shift from the emergency board. And we have nothing missing from this, and we're on the program.
That's a good passage. The two delays in vacant prison quarantine corrections administration and delays in hiring at the Two Rivers and in the sentencing computation unit. What's the funding for those two packages this biennium, and what will be the roll-up during the next biennium?
For the delay funding, we'll need to get that today. I don't have the two roll-ups. It's an $807,000 reduction, but I'll find out what the roll-up is.
Okay. The only thing I might add about the 7.7 is that it's added in lump sum here on the sheet, and about $2.1 million of that is due to caseload changes, and the remaining 5.6 is for phased implementation of the increase in baseline funding.
Senator Hannah, follow up on that, Bill. Could you indicate by the delay funding how much is the roll of cost for the next question?
For the 1145 piece?
In this
fight, I mean, it's just not going to disappear after this fight, and if we roll the cost up, then we're building in a potential deficit for next session.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, there is a piece of legislation that's moving in Representative Mass's committee that will change the funding for 1145 offenders and increase the payments. I'll have to check to see what the roll-up would be here.
Okay.
My understanding, Chair Russell and Senator Hannon, is that if the 5.6 is approximately what it would take to cover a 10-month period in this biennium, and if it were 24 months in this biennium, it would be another $7.5 million. So if you use that without any caseload change, the roll-up would be about that.
$7.5 million. Wait, how does 5.6 equaling 10 months equate to $7 million over 24?
No, it's another $7
million.
Okay.
Top
of that. That's a rough
estimate.
So 12 is 13. But the point I'm trying to make to this chairman is in other committees that I've served on, there are ways and means. Was concerned about what the potential rollout and postpone something for the last quarter of the biennium or the last half a year of the biennium
to bring something online, and then there's a tremendous rollout cost in the next biennium to either maintain that or you're setting it back. And it's kind of like giving your kids candy and then trying to recapture it after they've enjoyed their sweetness.
That's a very good analogy, Senator. Having kids.
They only this in the counties and learn the sweetness.
Well, I mean,
it came for something.
You'd enjoy it, I'd enjoy it. I just want to see pictures of you mowing that lawn.
Just for the clarification, the reason for the additional funding here is that the department and the counties have had a conversation for a period of time, as directed by statute, concerning what the counties are actually spending on the management of these 1145 offenders. And the research indicates that the state is not paying the counties at this point the full cost of managing those folks, so we're attempting to comply with the statute and actually move toward fair reimbursement accounts for what they're spending on this
population. Not paying them the full cost?
The counties are telling us it's costing them more to manage the 1145 population than the payments that they've been receiving to date through the statutory formula. So we're trying to move closer to a fair reimbursement to them, what they're actually paying.
I guess if you're going to go on a strictly a cost reimbursement formula, I'd be very interested in knowing what incentives they have to keep costs down.
Mr. Chair, we're not actually going to a reimbursement. We're attempting to look at what is a fair payment to the counties, not only for what they're spending, but also to provide an incentive to them to manage this population at less cost.
I didn't hear that in the first round.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, we're also going to have Scott Taylor come up here in a couple of minutes and talk about with the work that's been done, the incentive side of this, the other issues that have been addressed through trying to arrive at this fair cost model, and we're going to address that in a couple of minutes.
Okay. That'll be good. Any other questions on community corrections staff report?
Mr. Chair, we're going to, as we did a little bit yesterday, we're going to try to tag team this and get the right people here for succinct presentations to you about the issues in the director's office, and then the same situation in the institutions. The department runs through an executive management team directed by the director and the deputy director, the staff of the director's office. We perform a number of administrative responsibilities, including the management of central headquarters, coordination of Y2K business continuation planning, public affairs, the records management project, and sentence calculation requirements. During the 1997-99 biennium, and again, I'm speaking from notes, so you won't be able to necessarily follow along directly from your book. We incorporated three pieces into the director's office. One is the inmate work programs, inspections, and community corrections. In each case, we did this because we thought these were important issues that needed the director's office attention. These were areas where partnerships were important, and we were trying to ensure that we had the proper level of involvement to try to bring these all to proper conclusion. The inmate work programs joined the department or the director's office primarily because of the effects of ballot measure 17 and the sort of things that were moving through the system at the time. Our inspections division, which has existed since the 80s, is primarily there to give, from the employee point of view and from the institutional point of view, a base to work more closely with the Human Resources Department and the rest of the administration to ensure that when investigations take place in the institutions for improper behavior on the part of employees, that a level of fairness is there that was always there, but we needed to address some of those issues in a in another way, and we've included inspections in the division. During the 97-99 biennium, we had a couple of things we had to do to do more oversight on activities, and that included the rapid growth of inmate population and the number of employees coming into the department, new statutory and constitutional requirements, and what we deemed to be relatively complicated legal and political citing activities, and I don't know that anybody would disagree with us on the last one. You've all suffered through that. I'm going to be very brief on the accomplishments that are in your book. During 97-99, I'm going to highlight just three of those. We have continued to improve upon a 24-month planning process we've been doing now for almost 4 years. The department has key objectives that they have to accomplish every year. Each institution and each manager in each institution and the other branches in the Department of Corrections, the other divisions, all have managers with performance plans that relate to that 24-month performance plan for the entire department, so that the agency is moving with goals in mind. This isn't a walk through the woods. It's a particular destination we're heading for, and all of the facets of that 24-month plan address the kind of key concerns. Examples might be the construction of new institutions or the Major 17 work program. We attained 60% compliance for the work program in June of 1998. We fully expect to reach a 70% compliance rate by the end of June 1999. That is an accomplishment. Some people may disagree that that's as far as this needs to go. But I think the reality is you have to also remember that the department is growing by about 100 inmates per month on average. So to attain growth and compliance at the same time you're adding inmates at 100 a month is a pretty significant challenge, and I think we've done a relatively good job in getting where we need to be on this. And then finally, all of the inmates in the Department of Corrections will ultimately have an incarceration and transition plan that essentially says while they're in the Department of Corrections, there are certain obligations that they have to meet. After the intake process is complete, each of the offenders will have a plan as they move through the department, in a sense, a contract for their transition back to the community. If they need alcohol and drug treatment, if they need a particular kind of remediation on skills, whether it's literacy or something else, if they need a particular type of housing environment for gang-related activities or whatever the case might be, that'll be part of their incarceration plan. So they'll move through whatever their sentence is, knowing that ultimately they're going to go back to the community if they're one of that 95% that's going to do that with some idea of what they need to do to be successful in the community. There are a couple of key initiatives. Again, those are in your book. I won't even bother to highlight those. There are a number of them that you can read. There are things that we obviously know we have to do during 99-01. Primarily, they relate to, again, ballot measure 17, Senate Bill 1145 issues, and construction and operation of new prisons. I'm not going to go into any detail on the inspections division, again, in your book. We do want to talk about two particular topics. One, Bill just addressed with community corrections. The other one is this offender records and sentence computation piece that we've been doing now for almost 4 years. Ben's going to come up and cover the issues on that, and then we're going to move with Scott Taylor and myself through the community corrections presentation very briefly.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Benjamin DeHaan. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Corrections. I'm just going to take a minute or two of your time to highlight the offender information and sentence computation issue for a couple of reasons. One is it's one of the two enhancements, and the committee would, I think, benefit from the discussion. The other issue is when you describe a project like this, it looks administrative. It looks frankly boring. But the bottom line is this is a very important public safety issue because we invest a lot of money in security systems in these institutions, and census dates aren't correct. The sentences aren't calculated correctly. We literally open the front door and let the sender out. And that obviously is not what we want to do. This issue here more.
Tim, on your presentation, are you working out of the book here?
Senator Hannon, no, I'm not. I'm just going off notes, but there is a...
The reason I ask is that on the new information system that you're upgrading, with the problems and deficiencies associated with Y2K, are we going to be investing in something that a few months from now we're going to say, now we need to revamp and remodify it because we didn't anticipate potential problems with Y2K?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, that's an excellent question, and the answer is no, we won't be spending money that we'll have to spend more on to fix. The sentence calculation piece of this project is Y2K compliant, and it is a part of our overall information planning process.
So come January 1st, you'll have all the data maintained, and counties and community corrections will all be involved in sorting out the material.
Senator Hannon, this is really a different system than the one that was referenced earlier. This is a separate effort, and it's geared exclusively to sentence calculation and
corrections.
That's correct. And because it's new and because we've been calculating sentences beyond the year 2000 for some time now, we're virtually certain that it's Y2K compliant. It is part of the testing process. But the sentence computation project does have technological components, but it's a separate issue from our information systems in general. It's a very specific project that we started it almost 4 years ago, in 1995, you may recall from the newspapers that we let inmate Petrie out 47 years early. That happened to be my first day at the Department of Corrections. It was August 8th. And when we took a look at it, we realized that this system had not changed appreciably since the turn of the century. Literally, the way that sentences were calculated in the early days, when OSC was the 18th century, was the only prison we had, we put the inmates' belongings in a bag and their sentence in there and transported them, in that case, by, this won't take long, transported them by wagon. Well, essentially, we did it the same way until 1995. And when we took a look at it, we realized that we had to completely re-engineer the system. And we have done that. We hired a consultant. They re-engineered it. We've been working continuously since 1995. And the $500,000 that are included in this budget takes us to the last step and provides us ongoing management and support of that unit. I can't underscore enough how important this is from a public safety point of view. Very focused, very specific. It enables us to calculate sentences correctly so we let people out at the correct time.
Okay, so, Mr. Chairman, if I can, this is intended to get around that issue of releasing people prematurely from their time when sentences due to expire.
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, that is correct. And when you think about the different sentencing schemes, we operate now under 8 separate schemes, and every time there's a policy change, the legislature gives us a new sentencing scheme, that becomes very complicated to figure out how long you should keep somebody. In the earlier days, when the parole system was in effect for most of the inmates, 13 people served their entire sentence, so that kind of precision was not as important as it is today. Now it has to be absolutely down to the money, and we're doing that. We've had no early releases since we instituted this new project, and it's not complete yet, but we're pretty secure in knowing that we're on top of it.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, Dan, just kind of follow up along the same line. In the 97-99 administration chart, I'm looking in the offender information sentencing computation. You have 50 FTE. When you flip the page over to 99-01, you've got 62 FTE, which seems like a fairly significant growth.
And what I'd be interested in is what was the FTE in that position in 93-95?
Mr. Chair, in 93-95, the standing computation unit didn't exist as such. What we had was a distributed process where individual calculations were made out in all the different institutions. And part of our design here is to centralize all of those people. There has been additional growth, but we're also moving people into a centralized unit that didn't exist prior to 1995.
Mr. Chair, also, we'll get you that information, but the other thing to keep in mind here is this is also caseload driven. As the population increases, the need to calculate sentences applies to a greater number of people, so the workload and the need for those people doing sentence calculation is driven by the size of the population of DOC, which has increased dramatically since
1994-95. I'm on 355 and 356 of the administration charts. But, now, I'm just doing some quick math here. We've got, round number, 10,000 people incarcerated?
9,000.
Call it 10,000. You've got 62 people involved there. You're looking at one FTE for every 120 prisoners.
Actually, it's probably a little low, but it's ballpark. Yeah.
So we've got to have one person.
It's about 150 on 9,000 with 60. So.
Yeah. We've got to have one body to look at 150 prisoners just to make sure we're not letting them out early?
Or out late.
Representative Westland, I agree with your math, obviously, but there are some other things that we have to do. First of all, the highest risk inmates, we don't calculate the sentence only once. Part of our quality control methods now is that we have to check some of the more dangerous people over and over and over again to get it right. Every time they move, every time they change location, the sentence has to be recalculated again. There are 26 separate forms of orders that come in from all the different counties, and sometimes they take form of retainers and other things. These sentences are constantly recalculated. Sometimes they're charged with new crimes. That changes. It's depending on when the crime took place, depending on under what sentencing scheme. The bottom line is that it's a very complicated process, and it's in the middle of being re-engineered right now. So it isn't just a matter of recalculating them one time.
The other aspect of this, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, is that under the law that allows for earned time, about 6,500 of the 9,000 offenders requires monthly recalculation on earned time. So every offender, two-thirds of the offenders get a monthly recalculation of their sentence based upon earned time rules that apply.
Mr. Chair, also, the staffing that we have now, we have a half-time retired person who's managing this entire project for us, and part of what this package will do will give us a permanent position to manage what is one of our most critical public safety functions.
Well, but, given your number, 150, and I'm the sentencing guy, and these are my 150 people, I'm looking at prisoner A, and I go all the way down the list. I'm looking at the same guy every 2.5-3 days.
Mr. Chair, I don't think you're doing that because in some cases you have inmate sentence calculations that may take, with double check by other people helping on this, may take approximately a day with 8 sentencing schemes. I think what's lost in this whole process is that you have people sentenced under multiple crimes, multiple sentencing schemes, people that are resentenced by going back to court, people that are convicted of new crimes while they're in the institutions. If it were easy and if it could be done less expensively, we would do it. What we know is, through the process of looking at this from people outside the DOC and our own folks, is that it's a very complex, high-risk environment, because nobody wants anybody going out early, and the penalties of up to $1,000 a day for late releases, nobody wants it to occur late. So what we've got is a system that ensures, through this re-engineered system, accuracy that was not the case previously. And we don't know how else to do it less expensively or more quickly based upon all the information we've learned along the way.
Mr. Chair, one of the analogies we've used internally to stress the importance of this project is this. If a 30-foot section of the wall at OSC fell down, there'd be helicopters in the air to take care of it. But if through some sort of glitch, we open the door and let them out, it's considered a mistake. What we have said is it's unacceptable to take that kind of risk with public safety. And we may be able to shave a position or two off, but when you consider the magnitude of the failure of letting somebody out 47 years early, that's an unacceptable risk from our perspective.
Well, hey, we're all humans. We all put our pants on one leg at a time, and we all make mistakes. I mean, I'm not throwing rocks at you for letting whatever his name was, the day you started. I think that's a classic story. You're looking at every one of these prisoners, you know, three or four times a year, what it looks like to me.
Well, some you're looking at every month.
Okay, well, we'll talk about it. I don't want to get hung up on this whole thing. That's going to be fair.
I guess the question, you talk about re-engineering. I assumed originally that was like a computer program. It seems like a lot of this could be solved, or a lot of the headaches could be solved by putting this, all the different sentencing schemes, plus some of the other parameters, maybe not all of them, maybe even earned release time could be put in there. That would be a computer-type program. It would take a lot of human error out, and then the humans would just theoretically check the computer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, that's exactly what we're doing. When we hired the consultant to re-engineer it, the principle that he used was, first you have to re-engineer the business, and then automate it. We've done that. We are automating it. We actually have a sentence calculator that runs on a computer now as an algorithm. But because of all the different changes, because this thing was designed to calculate sentences in a more simple world, our staff are actually tricking the screen into doing the calculation for it because it's old style. It can't be reprogrammed easily as new laws come through. So basically, we've re-engineered the business flow. There's a graphics imaging piece where we're actually having to store records on disk as well. And so it's business re-engineering, there's automation, and there's a huge record storage issue associated with it, because we have to retain the records for, I can't remember the schedule, but it's much longer than most state government as far as retaining those records. So there are all three of those pieces.
Okay.
Just a quick follow-up. So I assume then the $500,000 which completes this project gets us to the point where it is no longer a cumbersome add-on tricking the computer thing. It will be a up-to-date system that will do what you want it to do, which is do all the calculations for you, given all the varied inputs, and allow you to adapt to the future, because there'll be other guidelines, unfortunately, you're fortunate enough to deal with, so that it will be very efficient, mistakes, chances are, won't be made, and you can maybe even have less people watch all the system and use it in other areas.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, that is our belief, that's our hope, that's our belief, and we think that we made a lot of progress. We think it will work for us.
Okay.
Representative Patrick. I just wondered, I'm looking at this and looking at policy package number 146 that you have in front of you. You're adding an additional 6 FTE and $776,000. I'm just wondering if your purpose is to do kind of the re-engineering piece, why those aren't limited duration positions as opposed to full-time FTE. If we're moving towards a more automated kind of system, I would hope that it would be more efficient, I suppose, rather than adding more people in the system. I understand your caseload is growing, even though every paper I'm picking up now says crime's going down. I'm trying to get a handle on that.
All right.
Yeah, Representative Patridge, the number that you quoted, I think, has been revised downward to somewhere around 500,000. The 6th FTE will not be doing the re-engineering, but they're to manage a unit that hasn't existed previously. Right now, we have people who are, as I mentioned, the person running it is retired and they have job rotations and people move from other responsibilities. What this would do would provide an administrator, it would provide technical support to make sure that our technical systems remained up to speed. There's your traditional administrative support, OS2, executive support, and those positions would be permanent in our view.
Just as a follow-up, Mr. Chair. But I guess my question is, that's great if they're going to give the technical assistance and some of those things, but if we're moving towards re-engineering, automating the system, getting a different algorithm, whatever we're doing, I'm just wondering, can't we shift the FTE from somewhere else where they're doing the hand calculations and those kinds of things? I mean, is it not possible for the department to shift those 6 FTE or whatever, 500,000 or whatever internally rather than go out and hire an additional 6 FTE? Or is it a different skill set? Or are you growing at such a rapid rate that, I guess based upon the calculation, I don't remember what the forecasts are, but to me, if I'm adding 6 more positions and we're at about, 150 per person, what was the calculation?
Well, we're adding 12 new positions.
No, but I mean, what was the calculation? 120. So 120 times 6. I mean, is the population growing? And that's
the population, right? Representative Patridge and Rick Quainian will go up about 1,600 inmates.
Okay.
So that's 10 right there. I mean, the same ratio. About the same ratio. You had 10 positions, and you're at 1,600. That's 10. Well, I say, don't want to belabor the song. We can. We got plenty of time to.
Representative Wesson, I think probably the best way to provide the information, unfortunately, we won't be able to do it, is to take you out and have people understand actually what happens with sentence calculation. As Oregon's moved to these varied sentencing schemes with the overlaps, it has become. It may be good from some respects, but it's become a nightmare from many other respects. One of which is sentence calculation. And it is a very onerous, very difficult situation, and you have literally people who are who worry every day about these calculations and what they may be doing as a part of those, because there's no single right answer. There's law, but there are interpretations of that law almost every day around these calculations.
Well, take Schrader and do it when we're having a committee, and then
sure.
You can report back. Representative,
I'd just be interested to know, I understand that the good time piece is complicates the calculation. But in terms of, besides mandatory minimum sentences, which we have, under Measure 11 and the 13-month mandatory minimum that we've got on the property crime piece, I mean, they don't get any good time for those. So you stick those in, and then you've got the standard sentences that they're getting under the guidelines. And I'm just trying to figure out why it's so
complicated besides logging the good time.
Well, each inmate representative package could be sentenced under every one of those measures you just spoke about. They could be calculated on each crime on a day. From your years prosecuting, you could have a person unlikely sentenced under all eight sentencing schemes. It's not going to happen, but it could very well happen. You frequently have people sentenced under one or more.
Mr. Chair, Representative Patrick, what I just handed you was a summary of only the large changes of the eight sentencing schemes, and under some of those, you can see there's subsets, there's 2 or 3 subsets under each one. So if you add those up, multiply it times 7 potential stays per inmate, plus the growth of the inmate population, and then you add to the fact that most of the people doing the calculations came up through the clerical support ranks and were not specifically recruited for their mathematical ability, you'll see that we have a problem with the Department of Corrections that people tried to fix 2 or 3 times before and gave up and said it can't be done. I think we're on the path here of fixing it. So if you can take a few minutes and look at that, we'll answer any questions.
Okay. That concludes that elucidating piece of work, unless you want to talk about some more.
New subject, please.
Yeah, thank you. That's why poor Ben had to do it.
Good job, Ben.
Get
a raise out of this guy.
Scott Taylor's going to come up. Scott's the Assistant Director for Community Corrections. I want to take my 30 seconds on this and take you back a couple of years to Senate Bill 1145. When that came about, I was still a sheriff in Benton County. Scott was working in the Department of Corrections. Sue Aikoff was a budget analyst, and Bill McGee was a professional water skier. I don't know what he was doing, but the point being that the world has changed since 1995. We have worked since that point to create, we think, along with the county partners, a much better system for 1,700 people that used to be in the Department of Corrections. They were there for an average of something like 4 months. They were moved in and out of the department based upon revocations and other kinds of activities. It was determined that a local system, using a number of different strategies, including jail and community management through electronics or supervision or house arrest or whatever you want to go to, had more potential benefit than using the prison system for that particular group of people. What we've done over the last 4 years is, I think, improve the quality of our relationships with the counties. We've worked on trying to get at what we consider now this fair cost model, which basically supports the cost of incarceration or other forms of sanction in the community. So I'm going to talk about that. What the $7.7 million gets at is essentially an average cost across the state for jail incarceration operation or community supervision. And this gets us to the point that the state upholds its end of the bargain, which was to take these 1,700 inmates out of the DOC system, put them in local systems, and manage them at an effective cost. And Scott will talk about the cost, and we'll talk about the incentives to continue to do that.
So left in for record, my name is Scott Taylor, Assistant Director of Department of Corrections. Dave is taking care of the basic introduction, so I'll just fly through that quickly for you. The idea in 1995, we started the 1145. It was passed in 1995, and we started a variety of changes. We actually saw the first big impact in January of 1997. And give those dates just to kind of reference, we're still on the transition and implementation phase of this. So we started in January of 97. What it did was it transferred responsibility offenders sentenced to 12 months or less from the DOC to the 36 counties. That was roughly predicted at that point when we looked in the prison. We had about 1,754 people sitting in prison that were serving an average of 4.2 months in a year or less. So that was a new population that moved out to the counties. And along with that population, we agreed to fund roughly 1,600 and some beds at the local level, the construction of those beds, to try and deal with that capacity that we moved out to the We've authorized a sale of $94 million in contributed participation that is funding us. We currently have 16 of those facilities up and running now and occupied. And that has increased the capacity of those counties to respond to that. We have a few counties that are still designing and working on those, and we have one or two who were allowed until June 30th of this year to actually put in an application. So we have those coming online. So all the capacity has been created or is being created for housing population. In fact, also transferred all community corrections divisions. So all probation and parole officers, all that kind of work is now done at the local level. And in accomplishing that, what we did was we sent out the funds that we used to spend as state operation or that we used to spend to the county under the Community Corrections Act that we've had since 1977. The primary purpose of this initial conversation with you is looking at the cost of housing this population and dealing with this population. We have both a budget note from the 97 legislature, and we have a statute that asks us to go out and look at the actual cost of taking care of this population. So we began by calling together, we have an implementation committee that's made up of sheriffs, judges, mayors, chiefs of police, community corrections directors, department of corrections folks. We call them together and talk about how to best do this. We then went out and worked with subgroups of the Sheriff's Association and the Association of Counties to look at the cost of actually providing custody and alternative custody sanctions for that roughly 1,700 people that used to spend time in prison. And we went out and went through several surveys, went through quite a process, and in the end surveyed the 30 jails right now that house people. There are about 5 or 6 who are contracted. Other counties don't have their own jail or contract with someone else to take care of that space. And went through a very detailed financial spreadsheet for them to fill out. We tried to have a standardized form so everybody's answering the same kind of questions. First time that kind of work has been done in Oregon, we were told. We came to a cost of $75.82 a day for the average jail. Now, that cost ranged from roughly $38 up to about $130, depending on where you are and the efficiencies of operation and the cost of staffing and all the different variables that go into operating a jail.
But what was that range again, Scott?
It was roughly $38 to $130, I believe.
Well, I'm sure someone's going to ask you questions about that, so I won't.
What was the average? The average came out to $75.82, and that's a weighted average. That means larger counties that cost more have a greater impact than small counties. I think our highest county in the state is Denton County, but it's a very small operation. And so we talked amongst...
Right, hold on. Senator Hannah.
I'm sorry, I have glasses. I can't see anything.
No, it's fine. Sorry. I wanted to ask you, that is the county reimbursed on the same sliding scale that the estimated cost is from 35 to 130? Somewhere along the lines, the state projects the cost based upon Senate Bill 1145.
Sir Hannon, no.
Is it actual cost?
The agreement of the committee and the way we distributed the money is that we used that average cost, that 70, in our request for the additional funding, it would move us to 75.82. And then with inflation moves it up to the 70 and 11 you may see. The original dollars that were started in 1997 was we said that we'd give you $65 for a jail bed and we'd give you $7 for the population, I don't want to get into complex here, but the population that we call alternative custody. Remember under 1145 we gave the authority for the
easy now, someone from maintenance of a person.
That's right.
Okay, now, when you're going from the 75 to the 78, what is the actual increase there versus the actual increase in the county dollars that is driving their cost up? Are you proportionally staying, or is it like the faster it goes, the behind it gets?
And what this most recent work tried to do was take the $98 and have the jails actually tell us what it's costing them to do the work. And then we took the, we were given the inflation rate of 3.02 to add to that to take it into 99-2001 biennium. And I'm sure in public testimony on Monday, I hope what you'll hear is that the people that participated in that feel that those costs and the raise in those costs, if they can move to that figure at a just cost, a fair cost for them to operate their facilities. There are those who get less than what it costs them a day to run, and there are those who get some more than what it costs. And the key to them is the management of that population. Because they are the supervisory authority, they manage where people stay and for how long. And they get to work within that. Plus, we give out the money and the community sector with a grant in aid, and they have access to the full range of the funding to adjust that.
Well, one of the provisions under 1145 was that there would be swift and able sanctions. If a county is small and has the additional facility built through 1145 funds, and is running at almost capacity, are they penalized in any way for exceeding the limitation or exceeding so that they have to devise methods of dealing with it at the local level.
Okay, well, that's what I'm saying, and I think you've approached one of the formier problems that had he tried to come to a principle that allowed people the freedom to manage their population and manage the funds internally and not get into a system for the state where we just pay whatever the bill is to come and do for us. 92% of these people that are housed locally are coming from probation and parole caseloads that are controlled and sanctioned locally. They create out of the huge population we have of 29,000 offenders, this population comes, 92% of it comes out of that. And so they have the ability to manage that population to a certain degree. And what we were trying to avoid and what they were trying to avoid is just a situation where you got paid more for the more you put in and the more expensive facility. So we tried to put some incentives and some limitations in the way we distribute the money and the way we build the budget that did not reward you for just stacking things up, but still tried to give you the ability to manage if your population got up near capacity. Most of these facilities are being added to existing facilities, and the local public safety coordinating council and the local supervising authority are working on ways that are at capacity, looking who they really have in jail, who they need to have in jail. And in some of these facilities we built, they move people, for example, in some counties we built some work release facilities, and they will move other people into those work release centers other than 1145 people, and the 1145 people then go into the hard beds that were freed up by that. So they're trying to learn how to use that continuum and figure out who they have to have behind walls and who they need out. So that's the...
So it's your opinion we're still in a learning curve.
Yeah.
Said again, the other underlying assumption there, I think you remember from the 95 session, the special session, was that there was an assumption that of the 1,700 or so people who were considered this 1145 population, at any given time, 75% of them could be sanctioned in jail. 25 would be sanctioned in some sort of alternative sanction. So that is part of the incentive process to ensure that, that a greater number aren't necessarily going to jail. The counties can choose locally to place more people in jail at any given time if they want to, but there's a cost associated with that. If they run their jail less expensively, they can afford to do that. If they have a more expensive operation, it becomes more difficult for them to.
What we have noticed is in those counties that are able to run below the cost, that funding is required to be reinvested in this population. So those counties are beginning now to invest in drug and alcohol programs, batterers programs, other things while the person is in custody or in that alternative sanction. So we're actually seeing an increase in the types of both sanctions and programming that goes on for that population.
Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Chairman. I apologize. I wasn't around when the 1145 was passed. Are you saying that the range is from 38 to 130, and the average, the weighted average is, what, 78, you said? So does that mean that all the counties across the board get 78, and so those who can do it? What happens to ones that are at the 130, and how are they dealing with the shortfall?
I can give you two examples, I guess, of different ways of managing it. Benton County, I believe, is one of the highest cost populations, and the sheriff in Benton County runs both probation and parole and jail, and has created a variety of alternatives and sanctions, day reporting centers, electronic, and other things to deal with the whole population. So to try and bring the numbers he has. So if you have 20 beds a day that we're funding you for at this merged rate, and you can figure out ways that you are going to house 10 people in those beds, then you pay the cost of those beds. And you figure out, merge with that, and figure out how much money you want to use from the probation parole side to manage that. The other population would be in Multnomah County, where originally they were housing about 730 people in our prison that fit this. And right now they're housing about 480 to 500 people in jail, and they created a variety of programs and reviews to try and move the right people to the right custody level and to some of those alternatives that they then have on intensive supervision or their day reporting, federal person comes in every morning and goes through programs. And in doing that, they've been able to pay off, be able to offset the sheriff's higher costs of his daily operation.
Can I follow up? Does that mean then that, in of course, you mentioned, you know, two of the larger counties, does that mean that for the counties that have the higher costs, that they are not getting the drug and alcohol treatment programs that some of the other counties are able to afford because they're under the ceiling?
Sure, Senator Burdick, I would not say that because if some of the larger counties have a broader resource base and they're still able to provide those programs or they were in the process of providing those programs. They're also finding that that investing in those actually may save them available by returns.
So they get from other sources then?
Yes.
Representative Minnis.
Just a real quick question. I know in 95, Multnomah County, we're not real happy with the allocation that was made to implement 1145. Have we taken care of their concerns? Do they have an adequate funding to do everything they need to do?
Where was that? I think allocation is always the area where we have the most discussion and consideration. I've talked to some of the Multnomah County folks. I believe that they are contributing letters in support of this budget and feel that it's on the way. And part of what we want to reemphasize is that the 7.7 phases in to this higher cost in the middle of the biennium. The idea being then that in future biennium could actually that would be a full 24 months of funding for that cost. And for most counties, when we get to that point, they will feel like their costs are being met. I feel like right now they're still making up some of the difference. And when we get to that place, they will feel like by their joining in this work that they will be getting much closer to what their costs are. We always discuss, are you getting all the money? But we think that we have come to agreement about if we can get to this actual cost, what we call actual cost, under this model, that we'll be fairly close. And the other place the discussion often happens is in our allocation formula. So here's this budget, now we figure out how we distribute it. And whenever we do that or change that, there are people who are winners and people who are losers or shift, and there's always some concern around how did I get with my share of the pot and did I decrease equity? And that always generates some conversation. But I think on the building side, and you'll hear from some people, I think on Monday, people feel like the moving to the actual cost actually captures that side of the formula.
Representative Schrader. Just had a question about how the dollars are allocated. It was mentioned there's some incentives in here, so they don't all go for jail, which is a high-cost item. And then I'm getting the feeling that, you know, for some of those that are under the average, they would have more discretionary dollars to use for other programs. And I guess the basic question I have is that when you allocate the $75 or the $18, or when you get to that point when you allocate those, does that take care of, do you do that on a per bed basis, or do you use the 75-25 allocation together, or some combination?
I think it's probably Representative Schrader going into excruciating detail on this, but essentially the debate since 1977 around community corrections funding has swung around two issues: dose population in a given jurisdiction and the size of the caseload, and the type of people under supervision. And Scott could certainly go into more detail. We are, again, in October, going to try to get closer with counties to an equitable distribution. What we know, and I think what you'll hear on Monday, is that of the 36 counties around the state, the demographic differences, the differences in resources and ability to respond to criminal activity in various jurisdictions, says a lot about what they need and how they're going to manage their population. And people have always, and Scott said it earlier, winners and losers have been created through the allocation formula. It has never been perfect. We think this is a step towards trying to sort of smooth out the transition to a better model. I think you'll have people come and testify negatively about the distribution and people who will testify very positively about it. we could go into, as I say, into the great detail, but the great detail doesn't necessarily lead you any place. What it does is simply say you debate population and you debate caseload, and you fall somewhere on that continuum. The 75-25 issue and some of that don't necessarily come into play. That comes more into play at the local level, and they decide how to spend that allocation that they receive for the impact population that they have.
I can go on for hours on that, but this is not. The principle we have used is that whenever possible, we try to move to an averaging or a leveling approach that does not give you an incentive for building your caseload or building your cost, and try to use a statewide type model. And in the past, all of the players have been supportive of that approach.
I just rephrase my question, sir. I don't want to go on for hours either. So then I assume that the $75 figure and $18 figure take into account all the different parameters, and if Multnomah County has 100 people in jail, they get 100 times 75. If they got 200 people on probation or in, you know, some alternate sentence, they get 18 times 200. Is that correct?
I think the simple model, I think through all the other stuff, would be that if you use the figure in our adjusted rate we're asking for, the 7.7 to begin to compensate at, and you use the rate of $63.44, that is what the blended average is, and then we determine how many people by that averaging model you should have in Clackamas County on any given day, and we give you $63.44 for that population.
Per day.
Per
impact number.
Okay.
Senator Kim.
This is going to be a short one. I was in the jail overcrowding for, I think, 8 years back in the 80s. And Benton County, and I know Dave was from Benton County before he became, or just today, had the Cadillac system in the state of Oregon. Claim they had the best. Are they still, through this program, what benefits has that given them? They have the $130, which is the highest in the state of Oregon. What benefits has it given them back 15 years ago, whatever it was, I can't remember for sure. And I don't even know if you were the sheriff then.
But
the point is, it was the best system in the state of Oregon. What benefits did you get out of being the best, or did they get out of being the best? They have the highest cost now.
Mr. Chair, Senator Timms, I think Benton County has one of the best. I don't know that they would claim that they are the best system. One thing I've learned in this position is each of the counties has things to offer that other counties have not done as well. Benton County has had for the last 20 years the smallest per capita jail probably in west of the Mississippi. That has always been a jail where alternative sanctions were used because jail space was not available. There's been a debate now for the last 2 years or so in the county about the construction of a new jail, both about siting, which you're familiar with, and about size of the jail. Benton County will probably build a 100-bed or so size jail. Benton County did not ask for money under 1145 for construction. They did in partnership with Lynn County to provide spaces for 1145. It is a system that I think has benefited from the autonomy to a degree that's been offered under 1145. There's an evaluation process that exists, but essentially under this model, the state is saying to the local jurisdictions, you have a responsibility to manage this population, you have a responsibility to manage it in a way that's effective for you through our evaluation process, and we're not going to micromanage how you do it. I think that Benton County, along with a number of other counties, has become a good example of local public safety cooperation, which is also a facet of this. If you remember, the local public safety coordinating councils were required under the bill. In Benton County, frequently under allocation formulas, is not treated as fairly as they believe they should be. Other counties are treated by their thinking better. But again, that speaks to the whole issue of sort of, do you have the right size population? Do you have some other factors that come into the allocation formula? I would say that Benton County would come in here today and the sheriff would testify and the community corrections manager that this is a good program. And they may be here Monday. I don't know.
What's bothering me is the word the Cadillac system when I look back on that.
and I wish I could remember better when it was.
Well, I would tell you, sir, I don't think they were.
The 85, you know, and there had to be an alternative to incarceration that made them the Cadillac system. In the
exactly. I would say it was a, I would never consider it a Cadillac system. It was a system that used limited resources and limited jail beds in an alternative way very, very effectively. Other people would say that they were probably the UGO system because they didn't have a jail that would support the criminal activity in the community. But they used, we used alternative sanctions frequently because the commissioners and the voters would not support a jail. This has given more opportunity for the county to manage that population than they had pre-95.
Yeah, I don't envy your position of trying to figure out which county.
I just like a, I need to correct a number I was using. I went back and I've been through, going through numbers all day, and somehow I got 130 nailed in my brain, and it's about 108. I think there it was right, 108.
Yeah.
A high again. I apologize.
Oh, well, that made more sense.
And I think that is Benton County. It's the 108, and with 100 dead jail, they'd probably be in the $80 range or $85 range, I would guess.
Yeah, like. I think Hugo's
it's more of a game.
It's an essay term.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, this is just a general question. Maybe the senators can help. If Representative Mannix was here, he could. You guys were here. What was the climate in 95 when 1145 was passed? I mean, two questions, I guess. One would be, were the counties saying, No, we're not very excited about this, or, like, bring her on? That's one specific question. And then the next question, I guess, would be on this, and I'm confused about this alternative thing. What was the feel with regard to the admonition or the sentiment with regard to hard bed versus alternative sentences? You know, were you encouraging to find ways for alternative sentences, and that was the way to keep the cost down on this whole thing?
Well, I think you probably could, maybe Scott and I should both answer the question. I'll answer it from where I was in 95, which was at the local level, and I think Scott can maybe give you another perspective on it. But I would say if you talk to the 36 counties and you talk to commissioners and sheriffs and community corrections managers and jail managers, you get a lot of different thinking about that. There probably originally was very little support for the notion, thinking that the state was going to offload a number of very dangerous offenders, and they were not going to support it financially. One of the reasons we're here today on the $7.7 million is to keep the obligation that we made in 95 to support it financially. I testified, as did several other sheriffs, Liz Bradshaw, Clackamas County, and others, very much in favor of 1145 because we thought that it gave us the opportunity to manage people that lived in our counties before they came to the state. They were coming up here for 4 months at a time. Nothing was being done with them other than moving from one institution to another, and it made sense to manage them locally because we're going to get them back anyway. As far as the dangerousness of these offenders, these are people that are already under supervision in the community. They were being, most of them, Scott was saying, were being revoked from the form of post-prison supervision or whatever the case might have been, where they were. They were coming to the prison system, again, coming back to the local community. They're dangerous people. There's no question about that, but all felons are dangerous people. They're going to get managed in the community eventually under supervision. This was the best model. It provided, if the funding was available, the kind of response that Oregon thought it could do better than a lot of other states. And I think a lot of that's come about. You will still find, if you go out and talk to folks, counties that have not made much progress in this area. They're still learning how to do the relationship building. They're still learning how to manage a court system, a prosecutorial system, a law enforcement system, and a correction system that interrelate. You have a whole bunch of people out there who don't talk to one another. And that's not a good place to be. Part of what was required under this bill was the local public safety coordinating council concept, where people actually had to talk about this money that was coming to the community, make good decisions about how to spend it, make good decisions how to protect the community, and impact these people that were in the system.
So, what's the answer to my question?
Still going to get the same. Well, what, I don't know whether you're talking 95 or talking today.
No, I'm talking in 95. Yeah, I thought when this was
the inception of this, when we're talking about public policy, is this good public policy or bad public policy?
Let's have Karen. You were here with Josh.
I was here with staff. The counties were not excited about this.
We're not.
And the sheriffs in particular were not. A lot of sheriffs, not all, but most of the sheriffs were not excited about this. And they were promised if they would go along and endorse this, that there would be plenty of funds to take care of the need. And then that's why the outcry, particularly in Multnomah County, that I know about, is because the funds didn't follow the promises. So this is not, it was viewed as a coup by the governor because he was able to get this through the legislature without any real plan in place.
And I know in my two counties, we had one sheriff that was all for this and one sheriff that was just total process. You guys got me?
No, basically my sheriff and I don't understand anything straight, and I don't know where I am. I don't know, but Paul Snyder was on that group sitting back there. I'm talking about that jail in the car. It'd be interesting when they have testimony in regards to this, but isn't it interesting since 1995 or 93 in that area what we've done as far as putting people away? If you want to talk about a success story, let's talk about it, you know. Are we getting to 9,000?
Sure, 9,000.
9,000 we're sticking away. At that time, we couldn't put anybody away. The counties were, you mentioned Benton County, the better one, didn't have any jail space. All they were using was alternatives. And in that short span of 4 years, what we've done, you know, as far as, you know, we don't need to feel guilty when we cut the Department of Corrections budget, or we cut OYA and those type of things, because they're all things that, wowie. But I mean, we have made one heck of an improvement in the state of Oregon.
I guess I tend to agree with a lot of what Dave said about the 95 environment. I think it was also from the State Department of Corrections. It didn't make sense to continue to house people for 4.2 months. And they were the kind of people that were going back to the bathroom. The cost was that way, the cost to housing in the prison cell, as opposed to what we thought the local government could, in fact, did. We just finished a review of the counties where we went out and we did what we called the political impact. And we talked to commissioners and judges and sheriffs, and they could say whatever they wanted about how do you like London inside, how is it working, what's going on with it. And the number one thing that they all supported was the local public safety coordinating council had really forced some dialogue they had never had in coordinating local resources. And their number one concern was that the state was going to back out of the funding and they would end up holding the bag on them. And that if the funding was adequate, they were supportive of the program. And that is why the clause in 1145 gives the option that if the funding drops, they can then back out of it. And that's why that was put in, to give them a safety net in case the state ever decided, and that was part of the agreements that went with, for the sheriffs and for the counties about, well, how do we know you won't just 4 years down the road start backing away from the funding on this? And so that agreement that happened in 95 was crafted with some idea that if you do this, and if you can make it work, we will continue to fund it at the level it takes to keep this. And we believe we're starting to see some trends with this short, swift stuff locally, so we'll continue to keep it a cost effective. We are holding the population at about where it was in 95 for this population. And I don't know that we could have said the same had we continued to allow the data.
Well, what I'm hearing you saying is that, well, go ahead, Mr. Senator.
I'm concerned, though, on the 1145 piece, what if them is that for those people that are 6 months and below, and what percent of the population goes down at the local level, and pushing those people out of the jail bed that they were in before. People that were under the 6 months, specifically that you were sentencing 1145 people to. Because I mean, from being a prosecutor in 95, that's what I thought is a mass exodus out of any ability to do any kind of incarceration kind of sentence that people undertook the most because the capacity wasn't there. Because the 1145 people that were pushed back on the county then took up all a large part of the incarceration.
I guess there was some, what I would offer at least is because we are in the early steps of this,
95, 96, even parts of 97, 98, we didn't have a capacity. We're now building for people. We went back and looked today. What we, and I won't say we have all the capacity that we need, and I don't know if we ever have that. But what we do see is an increase in sanctions, an increase in immediate response to people. And we do, we have brought on about 1,200 of those beds now are running in the different counties. We still, like I said, have a few that are coming online. But we've tried to offset that capacity. It wasn't there in 95, 96, 97 by building that capacity. And I don't know that it's what other effects will have. The best we can do is talk to the local, and I think you'll have our conversation with them, that capacity, depending on the county and the philosophy.
So you haven't, so as a follow-up, and you haven't kind of counted on what those people that were below, that were not in the 1145 population that were with, what has that 1145 had on that population at the county level?
We have not done a specific list how it affects most of our population in this community. So what happens to that population? We do know that in a variety of counties they've created matrix boards and other reviews to look at who they got, figure out who to let out or who to keep in. I do not have the numbers of how it affects that population locally.
But really we don't know from a total integrated systems point of view then what's going on in terms of who's been have a shift in the jail population. Because I would think, based upon my own experiences in Jackson County, what happened is that you loaded up these people who are 1145 kinds of people, and then my third defense drunk drive person then pushed out and has no time to spend in jail, or you get them on a 90-day sanction, and they're in for 20 days, and then they're out because you have your 1145 people. So that's what I'm worried about, and that's why I'm wondering if that's part of, I think that's an important component as we move towards funding properly the amount of money for increased capacity, what kinds of things that's
Representative Patridge, 1145 identified the impact population that was this group considered 1145 inmates. The state responded to the agreement to build the necessary capacity at the local level based upon the decisions that the local governments had part made. And that was done. This was a response to felony crime. It was a response to a growing population of the state to house violent and dangerous offenders, attempt to do what was considered to be a reasonable response as far as managing short-term DOC offenders at the local level, people who would be returning to the community. What it did also do by creating that capacity for 1145 was allow the counties to use any array of sanctions that they wanted to use in addition to jail. Nobody was required to house all the 1145 offenders in jail or to push out other offenders who may be better suited for jail at any given time. So that is, in fact, probably the number one thing you could say about 1145 is it gave back to the local governments along with funding, and I think Representative Minnis is right, that sheriffs were very suspicious of whether or not the money would come, and that's really why we're sitting here today, is attempting to do that. But the fact of the matter is that it gave local governments exceptional control over that population. And I think, quite frankly, what you have now in counties where they haven't managed that population is a number of local governments pointing to states saying, you guys didn't do it right for us, instead of taking the heat. Take the responsibility, build the beds, build the capacity you have for that population. The state's going to do its job in terms of not only building the beds, but funding those at the appropriate level if this bill goes through.
Which gets back to the second part of my question is, what was the county's responsibility in trying to hold costs down and implementing the alternative sentencing recommendations, and how successful have they been?
It varies, Chair Wexlin. The county's responsibilities are to manage, I think, probably if I were one of those county officials, manage at a rate that's lower than the amount of money that the state is providing, so you have the ability for the jail population at least to use alternative sanctions and do treatment. If your costs are higher than that, you're driving up your local cost of operation for the non-1145 population, and you're not housing the 1145 population at a cost-effective level, which is exactly why Benton County is probably going to build a new jail. Those jails that are efficient It can devote money if they choose to programming and other sanction opportunities. If they're inefficient, they won't be able to do that.
Okay, we built the jails.
You built some of the jail for some counties. You built the 1145 portion of it. They may have built additional capacity if they chose to using local funding sources.
But did Benton County choose to?
They chose to use Linn County's new construction to house 1145 offenders because they couldn't get a jail done.
What do you mean they couldn't get a jail done? We were building it.
No, you were only building 12 beds or something of that nature. And if they're going to build a jail, they need 100 beds. The state was only paying for the impact population. It was only paying for that identified 1145 population, which varied from county to county based upon the number of people that they were sending to the state on revocations and other kinds of types of sanctions.
Well, then we weren't, as a state, we weren't committed to building the proper capacity in the jail to begin with. That's what I'm hearing you say.
Sure, Wesson, you were responsible to build capacity to address the 1145 population. If you were a county that had a jail that was 30 or 40, 50 years old, and your population had doubled or tripled, and you chose not to build a jail, and you could only build it for 1145, you couldn't build much of a jail. You could only build it for the 1145 population from the state dollars.
Sure, Wesson. Also, add to that, that I think what gets confusing is a variety of the counties went together. So Benton County said, Linn County was building a new jail, and we can get 12 beds there. We'll throw our 12 beds in with them so they can build a bigger facility, and we'll do it that way rather than building it in Corvallis.
And that's why we have 22... 22 or 30 counties, that's all the 1145 quote facilities we have is 30. Some of them went together.
So we actually have right now 21 projects, and we have three counties pending. But yes, the rest of them went together, that's why we have a total of 22 projects when we finish.
Yeah.
And all 36 counties have places somewhere in the middle of one of those.
Okay, well, I'm just looking at this little puppy that says 30.
Right. That was the, when we tried to do the cost, we went out, because they've already got a jail running, we went out and said, what does it cost you to run your beds? Because we couldn't break out, these are 1145 beds, and these are front beds, and these are pre-trial beds. We said, what does it cost you to run your system, and so 30 actually have some facility.
So this is all of them?
It's all the counties that have jail operations.
That I'm
number don't have any jail at all.
Right. That
so how are we calculating the 1145 how many now in terms of what we got? Are we trending at it? Are we just saying you were...
We forecast them.
We forecast them based upon what they had before?
Yeah.
Or are you forecasting it based upon
super conviction? What we do is we've been taking snapshots as we go along. We can take out that population. We provide those then to the Office of Economics, similar to our prison population. They look at the growth trend and what they see in that population, and they project it out for us. So the April forecast came out with what they project that population will grow to over the next years, but we continue to keep track of that.
But is that based, but what I'm asking is that based upon the actual, you're taking a snapshot in time of what's currently in the county jails, which would be 1145?
Taking a snapshot of what's in the jail and what's in the alternatives. Separate days, and we go back to that. This process has been very elaborate. We've gone back through every one of the names, gone back to the county, checked to make sure they were in the right place, we had the right... checking our data system at the same time, and that gives us a base then population that's actually happening in each county.
I guess I would say and share with the rest of the committee that I feel like this is kind of a chicken and egg game coming out of a prosecutor's office, because now, after 1145, my judges that I appeared in front of were reluctant to revoke someone's probation, whereby they would get typically a 6-month jail sentence or something like that, if they get previous to 1145, because it would go to the state. Now they're saying, well, we're not going to revoke their probation. It's just increases the capacity on our jail. So heck with that. We're going to give them a different sanction. And that's what concerns me about the whole population piece is, you know, what judges, I think judges respond to the environmental pressures as well of what the jail overcrowding is going on there and what they're going to send. So it's a very strange, it's a strange situation, and I don't know how, I don't say that I know how to resolve it, but I'm saying that I think that there's a large factor there that maybe we should consider as we move forward.
I guess the other piece that we are continuing to try to study and get better at is the volume that's coming through, the length of stay that's coming through, and then the recidivism of that population, so we actually have an outcome of are we making any difference between the guy that used to come to prison, the guy that now stays locally, and the returns? And we believe part of the design is that the swift and certain may have as much impact as the length of time on this population. And that's the kind of stuff we're in the middle of trying to evaluate, but can't do it yet with 1 or 2 years' experience. We're trying to get more and more of that data, continue that kind of information, give ourselves that kind of, we're required to come back to you every biennium on the odd year. We're required to come back to the legislature with a report on just what we have and haven't seen so far and what are the numbers.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would say that the swift and certain versus length of stay debate has been going for years and years. In 1983, when I was a sophomore in high school, I debated the permanent sentencing and whether that had a recidivism effect on recidivism or didn't have an effect on recidivism. So I think that there is years and years of data that is out there and capacity that is out there. And I guess I think at some point you have to make a policy decision and move forward on that, because I think the data is all across the map. And
I think that is frankly the issue. The policy decision was made. 1145 does exist, and now the question is the state going to uphold its sort of end of the bargain in terms of actual cost? And I think that really is why we're making this presentation. It's around the enhancement package that relates to actual cost to manage this offender population.
Well, I think we're going to spend quite a bit of time on this.
Hannah, did you have something?
No.
Well, it's real close to the witching hour. The great news is 22 of the 30 counties are under cost.
And using this as a profit center and putting that into, you know, good, warm, and fuzzy drug and alcohol, spousal abuse, whatever they choose to do. You know, the question is what are we doing about the eight? How do we do about the eight? What's the median cost?
70.
That's the average cost. What's the median cost?
Oh, the median cost. I'm sorry, Chair, I don't have that. I didn't do the median cost.
Yeah.
Weighted average is...
Right, and it's going to be pretty close. I mean, it looks like the same one. Okay. We will adjourn for the day.
See everybody tomorrow.